You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Blessed above all of creation, it was a rare and precious pearl. Conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free, it was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. The reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize, confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand.
Today we've got a very, very interesting discussion on coronavirus, COVID-19, and I'm really looking forward to this because there's an awful lot of people out there who have a lot of questions and they haven't had a whole lot of really legitimate answers. And the gentleman we've got on today, I believe, will be able to help us solve some of those issues. So I'm really looking forward to it. Again, thank you. You do a great job, my young friend. You're a credit to your generation, I can tell you that.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. Have a great show.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to, today we're going to explore the COVID-19, the coronavirus issue. And my guest today is Dr. Shiva Iyadura. He is the inventor of email and polymath. He holds 4 degrees from MIT, including his PhD in biological engineering, and is a world-renowned systems scientist. He's a Fulbright scholar. He has every kind of award you can think of, including nominated for the U.S. National Medal of Technology and Invention. This gentleman has more credentials than I can even think about, and all I can say is it's going to be a real pleasure to talk to him. I'm not sure if he's yet online. I know he's running for the Senate in Massachusetts. I'm thinking he must be running against Hiawatha. But anyway, I'm hoping that he is online and that he can join us. I've been having a little trouble trying to contact him recently. Thumper, have you heard anything yet?
I have not, Dan. I'm checking my emails to see if there's any email from him, and he has not checked into the Zoom room just yet. So
okay. Well,
connect to the Zoom meeting.
Well, we'll talk about this a little bit, and hopefully he'll be joining us shortly. We do have a number of his videos that we can, I guess we can always fall back on that, but I want to really want to have a personal interview. This gentleman came from the most humble beginnings in India. He was actually born in India, and his family were part of the what was called the lower caste. In India, it's a caste system, and so they were like the lowest of the working class, and he came on board by his family's incredible desire to better themselves. And his dad and his mother both got college degrees, in spite of the fact that it was a very tough time to do that. And he came to the United States when he was 7 years old. And from there, he basically he went through the school system and got all these degrees and all this background. And the guy is so common sense and down to earth. I think that's the part that is most pleasing to me, is that this gentleman speaks as someone who doesn't have a big head, doesn't have let's say an overinflated ego about all of his credentials. He's just somebody who cares about this country. He's a red-blooded American patriot. He absolutely believes in America. He absolutely believes in individualism versus collectivism. He's someone who thinks that, you have the ability to pull yourselves up by the bootstraps, and he's someone who's actually proven that. So I'm hoping that we can get him on. He's running for Senate, and so I know he had a very busy schedule, but he did indicate that he would be on. So we'll just keep the channels open, and we'll keep working on this. America doesn't understand why we've done such an incredibly strange thing with the way we've shut down society. We shut down our economy. We've told everybody to go home and stay home, and our economy looks like it's going to suffer tremendously as a result of this. And according to Dr. Sheba, it's really uncalled for, because there's only a very small group that are in the very high risk group of actually dying from this disease. And he said they can be isolated. They can, they can sequester themselves. And it can be handled in a very, very straightforward way without shutting down our economy. So we're working on really the idea that if America doesn't start using a little bit of common sense in this, there's got to be another reason for this. It doesn't make any sense the way they're doing it. And I think we really need to let President Trump know that we need to really pull this this whole dynamic back, and quit getting the economy completely shut down, and start going back to work. And if some people have a higher incidence of contacting or contracting the disease, then we need to concentrate on that group and not on the entire society. So we'll just Thumper, can do you have Dr. Sheba's? I sent you a couple of videos that he had done. Can we maybe pull up one of those videos, and we'll go ahead and start playing until we get him back on?
Yeah, I'm getting them set to go right now.
Okay, great, great. Well, it all makes so much sense. It's also common sense that that's one of the reasons I really wanted to get him on for an interview, because it's nice to see someone from the scientific and medical community do things that are really, really common sense. So, okay, let's go ahead and play this, and we'll wait, and hopefully we'll have Dr. Sheba on with us shortly.
All right, here we go. I'm going live on all channels now. All right, I'm on Instagram. Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Sheba Iyadure. Welcome. It's almost noon time. It's afternoon time. Today, we're going to talk about the solution to how we really start looking
at the issue that's being caused by the coronavirus. In particular, the title is "The Solution," really, to the fake science surrounding the coronavirus, and really the fear that's really affecting our economy and you, and it's probably destroying you in many ways because you're so afraid to go out, you don't know what to do, and most importantly, it's also affecting our economy. So there's two things that this is affecting. First of all, it's affecting you, and it's also affecting the economy. And I've had so many people contact me from all across the country, extremely bright people across all spectrums, from everyday working people to people in very senior levels throughout many interesting organizations across the country. And they are first extremely appreciative of these educational videos we're doing. As many of you know, I actually run a full-time business, couple of them, but I love what I do, and I feel it's extremely important to start educating people on the science and what's going on. But today, what I want to do is to offer everyone listening, and the government, if they're listening, an actual solution to really the fake science that's destroying you and the economy around this coronavirus. And we're going to talk about science and the fake science that's being promoted right now that is really creating this fear. We're going to talk about the origin of this. We're going to give you some substantive ways to start looking at all of this from a system standpoint. Many of you may know that I have spent most of my life really trying to understand the body as a system. Everything is a system, because the ultimate truth is that if we want to solve real problems, we have to understand that it's the interconnections among things that reveal to us what the truth really is. If we don't understand interconnections, we're never really going to come to a solution of what the real problem is. So first, let me give you a couple of slides here that make this a little more real to all of you, so you know it's not theory. When I first came to MIT, and my first interest in medicine was to really become a great doctor, believe it or not, but life led me into more the research and becoming more of an engineering systems guy. But when I first came to MIT, the problem I had was that I wanted to pursue medicine. I realized that Western medicine really looked at the body as a system of not interconnections, but essentially parts. So that's what you see here. Basically, we start looking at the body as components, and we really don't start seeing it as an interconnected system. And what this has done to medicine is this diagram best expresses it, that if you go to see a doctor today, that doctor really doesn't look at your body as a whole. What that doctor is incented to do, because of a very unfortunate healthcare system, that doctor is really incented to triage you to as many specialists as possible, because that's how the entire insurance model, the hospital model, and the big pharma model actually make money. When you walk in, they're trying to figure out as many ways to extract wealth out of you. So if you go back to this diagram here, you come in with a headache, and you may get sent to someone with a digestive system issue, to a nervous system issue. You may get sent to someone with an endocrine system issue. You may get sent to many, many different kinds of people, okay? A psychiatrist, etc. And the goal is not to see the interconnection of what caused that headache, but just to sort of triage it to multiple people. And that system of medicine really comes from wartime medicine. And it was good at that time in the late 1800s, and something was going on with someone. We wanted to get them back on the battlefield. Okay, let's handle this issue, that issue, etc. It was called the triage model. But it's a reductionist way of looking at the body. Reductionism means looking at the parts, not the whole. So what this has done to our costs is healthcare costs have explosively grown, much higher than Social Security, much higher than defense, and you can see it's almost 20% of GDP today, which means 20% of about $20 trillion is our GDP. By the way, we have a debt of around $20 trillion, okay? Our annual budget is $4 trillion, but the bottom line is nearly most of our budget is going to healthcare in terms of a cost standpoint. And this is a direct result, in my opinion, of a reductionist approach we take to healthcare. Let me bring this up here. The other component that I want to share here is that this is something that that needs to also be understood from a systems perspective on how we actually look at the body as a system. Let me make sure everything's okay here. Good. So what we want to understand is that year over year, and this is a problem pharmaceutical companies are having. So one of the things I want everyone to understand is Big Pharma is actually in a perilous situation. And I've talked about this for 20 years when I used to give presentations on the technology I created that came out of my MIT work for really addressing how we make medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. But this graph is what I share. And by the way, the shape of this graph hasn't changed. What do we see in this graph? Year over year, what we see, by the way, those of you watching on Instagram, you can see this graph over on Twitter and over on Facebook and over on YouTube as I'm streaming it there. But what you see here is year over year spending in R&D. So if you're a pharmaceutical company, every year you spend 30% more on R&D costs. Now, if you spend more and more on R&D, which means research and development, you're expecting to come up with new discoveries. Well, what do we see here? They're finding less and less new drugs. Why? Because it takes anywhere between 13 to 15 years from a pharmaceutical company, which has to fulfill a regulatory framework, for that drug to go through that process and get allowed by the FDA. It's a very time-consuming and highly liability process that the pharma industry is actually in peril. So a new compound comes, they have to do test tube testing in vitro, then they kill a bunch of animals. This takes around 6 years. If they get FDA allowance, then it goes through phase one, phase two, phase three. The simple point being that it, because of the regulatory standards, it is very expensive for pharma companies to get a drug through. And if the drug gets through, you can sue them, okay? This is important. High liability, and as you see here, high cost. So pharmaceutical development is high liability and high cost. And when I mean pharmaceuticals, I'm talking about drugs, chemicals that don't appear in nature. We're not talking about natural products. So you see that, and by the way, 20% of stuff that fails occurs in phase, only 20% make it out of phase one, which is the small clinical trials with humans. The big takeaway here is that what you see here is that the way pharmaceutical drug development is done is actually quite medieval. In fact, medicine is medieval. The way they treat your body is not as a system. They treat you as parts. The way that they develop drugs is in many ways a way that we used to build airplanes about 100 years ago. You have a design, let's say that's your drug, okay, by analogy. Well, you have a design of an aircraft wing. Well, what do these guys do? They simply used to in the old days, well, let's test this test pilot out. They put the test pilot in. If it fails, they say, gee whiz, he died. And if it succeeds, then after the fact, they come and explain why that worked, okay? So it's not even rational drug development, understanding the mechanisms, but it's after the fact. It's after the fact, they explain, oh, we shot a bunch of stuff, something fell down, this is why we think it works. I hope this is clear. And this is not that different than the way 100 years ago we used to build airplanes. So it's frankly a non-engineering approach. And the reason this occurs in medicine, and you're going to find this really funny, but the reason I'm sharing this with you is I want all of you to start understanding what is the state of medicine today, what is the state of the art today, so you can start overcoming your fear, and really we can really help yourselves from destroying yourselves in terms of feeling unhappy, scared, and depressed. But this is what goes on. The reason medicine occurs and is backward is because the entire aspect of medical research is based on like the blind men touching the elephant. You have the elephant, let's say that represents some disease, okay, coronavirus attacking us, the immune system, or Alzheimer's, etc. These guys, this is a very famous story of the king who brings in the six blind men and asks them to touch the different parts of the elephant. Well, because they're blind, they don't see the whole, and they have a blinded view of reality. So the guy who touches the tail thinks it's a brush, the guy who touches the tusk thinks it's a spear, and so on. And the reality is you end up, if they were ever to work together, you'd end up with this, okay? It's a non-systems-based approach to medicine. And this is what we have today. This is how we're going after this quote-unquote coronavirus pandemic. We're going at it using people in the CDC and, unfortunately, a guy like Fauci who really doesn't understand systems. And he's been at this for a long time, and I'll talk about that, since Reagan times. But the bottom line is we don't take a systems-based approach to medicine. What we have is a non-systems-based approach. my interest in this was, you know, I went in and out of MIT, did many degrees in engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and design. But in 2003, because of my deep interest in computing and biology, I came back to MIT because the biologists had taken a non-systems-based approach to the genome project. You know, we knew a worm in 1993 had about 20,000 genes, and we thought when the genome project started, we were trying to sequence our genome. We said, wow, we're a more complex system. We must have a million genes or 100,000 genes. And what you find that's fascinating is in this graph here, when the genome project started around here, 100,000 genes, in 2003, when it ended, it turns out we only have 20,000 genes. So what does that mean? The bottom line is that we don't have 100,000 genes. We have the same number of genes as a worm, which means biologists, MDs, who really don't understand engineering, thought more parts, more genes, more complexity. Worm has 20,000 genes. We must have a 500,000, 100,000, but we only have 20,000. Now, engineers like myself or the working people like a plumber and electrician understand complexity is not the number of parts, but it's how they're interconnected. You could have four parts and you can interconnect them in a much more complex way versus even having 10 parts, okay? So it's the interconnection. So this led to a field in 2003 called systems biology, and it was a revolution because it said we're not our genes. Just because you have this gene doesn't mean you're gonna get this disease. So think about this. The doctors, the medical professionals, up to then, the fascist view of biology was, you have this gene, you're gonna get this disease. You have this gene, you should maybe think about, you know, as we've seen people look at the BRCA gene, maybe I should, you know, get rid of my breasts, which one of these celebrities recently did. But the notion was, genes will directly relate to disease. It's not true. So this was a big revolution in biology. What that led to was a field called epigenetics, which means genes can be turned on and off, and it's much more complex, and it led to a field called systems biology, saying if you're going to understand the whole, you need to understand how the genes interact with proteins across many different hierarchy, from the organ to the cell, etc. So this was really the development of systems biology. So for me, you know, I had been in and out of MIT, always interested in medicine, very disappointed that medicine took a non-systems reductionist approach. You know, the doctor who doesn't even look at you, he sees this, if this, then this. Most doctors are not that bright. I hate to say this, there's a lot of good people, but they're not trained in an engineering approach. It's not that they're not bright, they're ill-trained, okay? They're not trained into seeing the interconnections among things. But in 2003, what occurred was a new field called systems biology came. And systems biology said, if you're going to understand the whole, you need to start understanding the interconnections. And one of the big challenges that the National Science Foundation put out was, imagine if you could mathematically understand all the chemical reactions in the human cell. And if you think about it like this, if you think about a cell as basically an interconnection of many molecular reactions, then we could really start using the computer to model diseases, model molecular reactions before we actually go do the animal testing and hurt people and take 10, 20 years to discover medicine and avoid toxicity. So for me, this was quite an extraordinary opportunity. My advisor at MIT, Professor Forbes Dewey, said, hey, you should come back. And the challenge I took on was, could I create a technology that could mathematically model the whole human cell? And that resulted, I mean, I'll do some videos on this later, but the end result that I want to share with you is that was a development of my PhD work, which I've shared online, called Cytosolve. And Cytosolve said, look, these are little molecular pathways. When you write a paper, if you do research in a field, you publish these little molecular pathways. These were becoming models, and my technology was, could you integrate these systems of models? And that resulted in my PhD work and what was called Cytosolve. Cytosolve was a way to use the computer to look at a field, let's say the immune system, gather all the papers from it, interconnect the molecular reactions and get a holistic view, a systems view of the disease or the biological phenomenon, and then use that methodology to actually understand what combinations of medicines could work. So that was really the development of Cytosolve. And there's many videos I have in it, but fundamentally what Cytosolve did was, instead of taking a compound and going through this arduous process, we could actually mathematically automatically model stuff on the computer, use cytosol before we killed animals, before we did this, to understand toxicity and understand what's going on. And by the way, this is how we build airplanes. We don't simply throw a pilot in. We use a computer. We understand what's going on in silico, which means on the computer, before we throw the pilot in to a test flight and kill him. So bottom line, cytosol provides this amazing opportunity to take the science. So we're not really making up science. We're looking at a field, extracting all of it, interconnecting it to get a holistic view. Now, why is this important? Because in academia, we have people who like to promote their agenda, their little part, and try to push it out. Here, we can take multiple sources, integrate it to get a much more profoundly holistic view of what's going on. A simple way of thinking about it is, we can take, for example, papers in the field of the immune system, understand the molecular mechanisms, model it, and then we can really come to an understanding of what truth is. It's really a scientific source of truth. So I wanted to share that with you because that is sort of the foundations of what we've put together in a way of really understanding how the overall, you know, immune system actually functions. And I've shared some of the other slides with you earlier, which we really talk about the immune system. So why am I sharing this and why is this important? Okay, why this is important is for the following reason. When we start really looking at medicine today, we really recognize that if you take a piecemeal approach, people can promote their own agendas. Let me repeat that. You can create fake science. So just think about that. If you don't really look at the interconnections of the parts, you can start creating fake science. I think, let me see if I can bring that up. If you guys remember, a few days ago, I shared with everyone the a view of the immune system. Yeah, here it is. Let me bring this up. Let me bring it up right here. I'm gonna, in fact, bring it up right here. If I can do this here, let's see. File, open recent, here we go. If people remember, I brought up a, let's see. In fact, what I'm gonna do is just copy these two slides. 1 second, so I can put it in here. And put it right here. Okay, so if you remember last time, if I can do this, I shared with all of you a view of the immune system, which basically, it's a white background. If you remember, there was a pathogen coming in. You have the innate immune system and the adaptive immune system, which gives rise to what's called an antibody. Let me just do this in the interest of making this easier. 1 second, everyone, if you don't mind. There. All right, so this will help a little bit better. So what you see here is that this is the model, the old model of the immune system before you take a systems biology approach. The old model of the immune system is you have two compartments, compartment one and compartment two. A pathogen like a virus comes in. Your innate immune system, which is all the aspects of your front-facing system to the virus, your eyes, your nose, your throat, everything that goes through your skin, but it's the thing that faces the pathogen as it comes in. So if someone sneezes on you, it's the stuff in your nose cavity, your mucosa, your eyes. It's the innate immune system, and the innate immune system attacks back by using things like macrophages, etc. And then we talked about the fact that that innate immune system, after a while, it kicks into your adaptive immune system here, which creates antibodies to target that particular antigen. But the reality, what systems biology shows, it's far more complex. It's not just a two system model. There's multiple systems, at least five to potentially six other models, including the gut-brain axis. You have the microbiome, you have the innate, you have the adaptive, you have the interferon system, you have the neural system. You have multiple systems working together. You have multiple systems that are participating in fending off that virus. So the bottom line is, when you take a holistic systems view, you find out that the immune system is far more complex. But one of the things you find out of all of this systems work that's taken place since 2003 is one size does not fit all. Let me repeat that. One size does not fit all. Okay? That means medicine is moving towards recognizing we need to move to personalized medicine. Right medicine for the right person for the right time. And that really gets me into what I want to talk about, what the solution is right now. If you look at what's going on, which is making you afraid, everyone, and tanking the economy is because we have people who are advising the President of the United States with fake science. Let me repeat that. The CDC and the people like Fauci, maybe a nice guy, and we'll talk about him potentially later if he wants to talk to me, but we are basically advising the President of the United States to assert a health policy that is based on fake science. I know it may seem harsh, but you're looking at someone who studies this for a living. I've been invited to the major institutions all around the world to speak on precision and personalized medicine from the NSF. I've spoken at the NIH, Harvard Medical School. So you can look at my credentials, but what I'm here to raise a big, big time out is that we are pushing forward a health policy in this country based on outdated, if I want to be kind, outdated understanding of the immune system. On a good day, on a bad day, it's fake science. That's what's going on. But we have a solution. So I'm not here to bring some alarm, but there is an amazing solution. What we're doing right now is we're applying one size fits all. That is a medieval science, which means, you know, everyone gets the same medicine. In traditional systems of medicine, which even thousands of years ago, when the healer saw you, you got a very different medicine, could be for the same disease versus someone else got. Right medicine for the right person at the right time. We need to do the right quarantine for the right person at the right time. So what do I mean? We have people who are advising the president to lock down everything. That's what's going on. And what that is doing to this country, it is destroying the economy. And maybe some people want to destroy the economy, or maybe some people want to test how much fascism we will take, how much they can use fear so we give up our freedom. But there is a solution. Look, as I've said before, it is not the virus that harms the system or kills you. It's not the virus. It's a compromised immune system. It is not the virus that harms somebody. It's a compromised immune system. If you look at these boxes here, some people's innate immune system may be compromised. The adaptive, which means their macrophages are shot, or the adaptive immune system is shot, or their microbiome is shot. Any one of these systems could be compromised. Why? If you eat a high sugar diet, your body creates candida, creates gliotoxins, as we talked about, and those gliotoxins attack your T cell systems and your macrophages, and therefore you compromise your immune system. If you don't have enough vitamin A, which comes from your thyroid not working properly, that you're not getting enough proper nutrients, well, you know what? You're going to compromise your immune system. If you're 400, 500 pounds overweight, you're going to compromise your immune system. We have a lot of unhealthy people in this country created by big pharma, big ag, and big academia, who do not want to talk about health. They want to push on us regulatory stuff. They want to give us regulatory solutions always. And those regulatory solutions are always controlled by pharma and big ag. Let's talk about the actual science of the immune system. As I said, it is not the vaccine, it's not the virus that kills you or harms you. It is the overreaction of the immune system because we have weakened and dysfunctional immune systems. So here's a solution. Let's go find or create a criteria for, let's say, the elderly, because they may have compromised immune systems. Let's go find those people who have diabetes, excessively overweight, smokers. Those people, we should highly advise them. Those people should be quarantined and taken special measures if you actually believe the entire immune system model. It's a different question, but let's give that to them. But let's not shut down young people, small businesses. We are decimating this economy by a one-size-fits-all model. Shut down everything. It's completely nonsense. The prudent way to do this is that let's take a personalized approach here. Let's take a personalized approach to figuring out if you want to, support this process, is who is truly immunocompromised, and educate those people. Ideally, it's their decision, which I think people are smart enough, but educate people. Look, you should probably, you know, take a chill pill for a while. But the people were healthy. By the way, I think 56 to maybe 70 people have been killed by this virus. Most people, you know, over the age of 80. And by the way, none of the science isn't even settled on this, that the virus is the thing that caused their death. Let me repeat. There's a very important set of postulates called Koch's postulates. Everyone in science knows this. In order to prove causality, there is a set of postulates called Koch's postulates. And the coronavirus causing that this disease, what people get, has not been proven based on Koch's postulates. And Anthony Fauci, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about, because you've been involved in the entire virology movement and to push vaccines since you started working for President Reagan when the National Vaccine Injury Program was implemented. Anthony Fauci, you know, he's learned the art of coming across as a nice guy. He may be a nice guy. I think Trump called him a movie star, but let me tell you what the issue is. He is a representative for big pharma, big ag, and big vaccines. Okay? This is a problem that I have because he is promoting outdated and fake science as a model to impose for everyone should be quarantined and to decimate this economy. Look, you have to understand risk. We have what we're experiencing right now in this country is we're at a very interesting inflection point. Are we going to follow the Chinese model of everything, a fascist model? What's happened in this country is we have sold a lot of, the Chinese own a lot of our debt. We have outsourced a lot of our manufacturing. A lot of our intellectual property has been stolen. And what America has become is a consumer economy where we don't really produce. We don't really have educated people with skills. And what's really happening to this economy is we print money as a solution. And you know who's getting most of those dollars? China. And China gets a lot of those dollars, and the bankers funnel it into hype up the stock market. And who is getting hurt in this is the American worker. And what we are creating is fear, and using that fear, we create regulatory environments to impose an authoritarian rule of people. We saw this after 9/11. We use terrorism. Terrorism, terrorism, terrorism. Well, using that policy, we started regulating many things. Then we had Dodd-Frank. You know, that, and what Dodd-Frank did is wipe out all the small guys, the small bankers. We consolidated power to big bankers. Now we have the NSA, which got created. And using this new fear, they are going to impose on you the solution of mandatory vaccinations for everyone, right? One size fits all. And that is what is being tested today, ladies and gentlemen. You're being tested to see if you will accept this fake science. The solution is that we need to get the economy started. People need to be working. And to take this extreme position based on a fake science viewpoint is absolutely reckless. And what we're doing is promoting a health policy and telling the economists, many who I've spoken to, and they're extremely scared, they're going to be headed to a Great Depression. They're telling the economists, you solve it later. We're going to quarantine the hell out of everyone, and you guys fill it in. And how are they going to fill it in? Printing money, printing money, printing money. Well, a lot of that money is going to be transferred to the wealthiest people here, go to China, which is holding our dollars. And when this crashes, China will buy our assets. And by then, we would have become an authoritarian government, which is what this is becoming. We're nationalizing many, many features, and we want to create nationalized healthcare, which means one size fits all. That is where this is headed. If you're listening to me, you will start waking up to the fact that what we need to do is recognize that we're in the future. You're talking to a guy who invented the first email system. I know about creating the future. I've created many companies which are always cutting edge and leading edge, including this company Cytosol, which actually allows us to enable small businesses to create better products faster and cheaper. But what I'm telling you is, what we need to move to is the right quarantine for the right person at the right time. Because the immune system, healthy immune systems know how to ward off viruses. Healthy immune systems know how to ward off viruses. China is getting back to work. couple thousand people died, and most of them, 99% of them, were immunocompromised people. And we don't even know whether it was a virus that caused that death. Okay? Cox postulates have not been satisfied. Let me finish with this closing, is that in the late 80s and 90s, we had this thing called HIV. And HIV was correlated to cause AIDS. And we said HIV AIDS. Well, that was one of the biggest scams that I'll talk about more, but HIV, according to Cox postulates, was never proven to cause AIDS. John Duesberg, you can look him up, Peter Duesberg, I'm sorry, at Berkeley, an eminent scientist, one of the youngest people who got tenure, one of the youngest people in the National Academy of Sciences, blew the lid on this. And he showed that the retrovirus HIV causing AIDS has no relationship. In fact, most of the people who got AIDS acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, was because of lifestyle habits. For example, there's not one paper written showing the causality of HIV to AIDS. So today they call it AIDS-related diseases. Anthony Fauci and Robert Gallo were the guys who promoted this fake science. And they got everyone hyped up, everyone fearful. Fauci is the one today advising the president, and he's using fake science to promote a health policy which is going to devastate this economy. And if it doesn't devastate the economy, he's got a backup plan. He'll come out potentially as a hero saying everyone should be vaccinated. Mandatory vaccines, mandatory medicine of all kinds, because he saved us from something. The reality, it's fake science. Here's a solution. Let's support the immunocompromised. If they want to be safe, let's support that. Let them make their own decisions, which I think they will choose right. But let's get people back to work. We can't have small businesses going down the tank. We're going to destroy this economy, make it beautifully perfect for the Chinese to come buy our assets. Anyway, think about it. You know, overcome this fear. Understand we're dealing with people promoting fake science who have economic interests for big pharma, mandatory vaccines, and want to crash this economy. Thank you very much. Be strong, Dr. Shiva.
Okay, great. Thumper, I understand that Dr. Shiva is on with us now. Dr. Shiva, I have to tell you, you are an incredible man. You've done some amazing things. And I think the most important thing that I've taken away from the various videos and things that I've read about you is that you are an incredibly common sense, regular guy with an incredibly bright mind. Dr. Shiva, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks. Great having me. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, you bet. I'm thrilled that you can be with us. What you were talking about in that video that we just played is exactly why I thought it was important to have this discussion on air. A lot of people in our country are totally confused because nothing makes any sense. They're doing things that don't make a bit of sense from a practical standpoint, and we're already so heavily indebted. We've already got so many economic and structural problems in this country. The last thing we need to do is completely shut everything down. And what you talk about makes perfect sense. I wish you'd go ahead and continue on that theme.
Sure, Dan. Dan, one of the things I think you just said was just common sense. I just want to, before I delve into this, you know, I grew up in New Jersey as a working class kid. I grew up before that in India where my grandparents were farmers. You know, very common sense people, whether it was India as a kid or whether, you know, it was later when I grew up in New Jersey. And the kind of people I grew up with were people who were nuts and bolts type people, work with their hands, created things. You know, they had an intelligence which goes beyond a lot of the quote unquote smart people that I've met since then, even who got a lot of degrees, et cetera. So I just want to say it's a very interesting world we live in. That we're actually very fortunate, at least over 50% of it is still consists of people who have common sense. And that's why I think we're still alive today. Mm-hmm. We're not completely in bondage, because otherwise I think it would be a very, very different situation. So in many ways, popular democracy still works because Donald Trump did get elected, and we're at this point in history. And I think that's what really bothers those people in power, the fact that everyday people are still around, and then they can't impose their will on us. So that's, I think, something that we should all consider, that the good news is there's still a lot of common sense people out there. So I just want to make that point. Having said that, you know, yesterday there was an article in the New York Times attacking me. It was a very interesting article because it attacked me in one line with an ad hominem. And it was an article, it was, you could see it clearly, done by two little toddlers, meaning the two journalists who did it know nothing about science, know nothing about technology. The New York Times typically creates its little minions whose purpose is to do their bidding. In this case, it was clear that Fauci, after, if people look at my tweets, my videos, I've been hitting him very, very hard, as we just heard in this piece, of a guy who's been in the United States government, a bureaucrat who all of us have paid our tax dollars for over 40 to 50 years. We've essentially paid for his existence. And what Fauci has done is he essentially owns academics in this country. Now, I think one of the things people need to understand is the way academic research works has become done in a very unfortunate way, where academics today are the, you know, practice the oldest profession. And you should think about what that means. Academics starting around 1970, or academia in 1970, became extremely reliant on money and where your money came from. So most academics today, very different than scientists, so I want to distinguish the word academics from scientists, became reliant on grant money. And that meant the people who became the quote-unquote best academics were the people who were salespeople, Dan, the people who could sell stuff, not the people necessarily who could do things, meaning execute science. And that model, and that, by the way, happened because of the Mansfield Amendment in the late 60s, early 70s, which really transformed science, because lots of money, which at one point was intended for truly basic research, which was given away to do really great research prior to that, became under political organizations like the NSF. So what ended up happening was these scientists essentially became politicians. So they became academics to survive. And in 1961, in some ways, 61, John Kennedy really foreshadowed this when he gave a speech at the National Academy of Sciences. And what John Kennedy said was, you know, this was before, but interesting enough, 1 year before the Vaccination Act was signed by him, and to create the CDC and create all these organizations. And that speech that he gave to the National Academy of Sciences, I think he was speaking to around 2,000, 3,000 different scientists. And the speech he gave, Dan, was quite fascinating. He said, you know, we are at an interesting point. There's a conundrum with democracy. And what he was saying was that the problems of the world are getting more and more complex, meaning, how many politicians know how the immune system works, right? How many politicians know the intricacies of the healthcare system? How many politicians know radiative physics to understand how CO2 serves as a component in a very complex reaction of two turbulent fluids called the atmosphere and the ocean to create convection to let off? You know what I mean? These problems, he was saying, were becoming complicated, and therefore politicians would have to outsource their thinking and their decision-making to academics, right? And what he said was that this is a real problem because, large, 300, 250 million people are now essentially outsourcing their decision-making, not to their elected representatives or to support their elected representatives, but to maybe 2,000 guys, Dan. Mm-hmm. And who are those 2,000 guys? They're basically controlled maybe in this country today by three university presidents. So if you look at the heads of most of the universities, Harvard, MIT, et cetera, one phone call to them, literally from the president of the United States, could affect could affect public policy, right? And so therefore, what he said was, he said, but we assume you guys will do the right thing because we assume you're disinterested, objective third parties. So this is a key thing, Dan. He was willing to say, okay, we're going to rely on you guys, but we're going to assume you're disinterested, objective third parties, academics. But that's not what's occurred, right? We know for a fact that academia today is not disinterested third parties because of what occurred in 1970 with the Mansfield Amendment. They basically are pay to play. So if you tell them that CO2 is a pollutant and you give them $20 to $40 million like MIT gets grant money, that's what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. And so if you tell them, oh, the immune system, the only way to solve and strengthen and support the immune system is vaccinations, that's what they're going to say. And that's where we're at. And a guy like Anthony Fauci controls the lives of academics. One individual, and everyone should really get this, one individual controls the lives of many, many academics who, by the way, most of them don't have any sense of real patriotism or concern for doing the right thing, because it's about getting their tenure. It's about, you know, their future, their papers, et cetera, right? So that's what we have. So we've created a situation in this country where we really have Emperor Fauci in many ways in the scientific, because if you are in the biological sciences and you are a young tenured academic coming up, and meaning you just got your PhD and you just got a faculty position, you have 7 years, Dan, to actually get your tenure, right? So in those 7 years, Dan, you got to get grant money. You got to submit your grant applications, and then you have to get funding. Well, do you think any of those guys are going to, and given Fauci's eminence, quote unquote, eminence and power, right? They don't do it. So no one's going to ever say anything against him right now. Has any academic in academia said, wait a minute, the health policy that's being promoted by this guy is wrong? That's my question. And do you see anyone? Not one. And that pretty much tells you what's going on in this country. It's basically very small sets of people are controlling a health policy in this country.
And Dr. Shiva, I want to add something to that. Academia in this country over the last 40 years or 50 years has slipped very much in the socialist socialist or the Marxist camp. And that has an awful lot to do with the play of academia in science and many other things, because they're thinking of things with a totally different political system. And that's what they're promoting. Am I wrong on that?
No, Dan, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting point you're making. I think only, look, I don't, frankly, I think if people have heard me, I don't really care for either political party. You know, I care for people, you know, when I mean that, the GOP establishment, mm-hmm. or the Democrat establishment per se, because neither of them, for example, really want outsiders coming in. We saw that with Trump, right? He wasn't a Republican or a Democrat per se. He was a conservative, if anything, and a patriot. So mm-hmm. they didn't really want him. And the GOP establishment really doesn't care for people like me. And we can talk about that when I ran for office last year against Elizabeth Warren and what I'm doing now. But the bottom line is, even within having said that, I think only 6% of academics are quote unquote Republicans. Okay. That's what the numbers show. And which means the other, and I think 60-70% are, you know, actual Democrats. So that's what the truth is right now, right? So if you mm-hmm. think about it, what is the probability that an academic is going to support the existing administration's, you know, which means not the policies, but someone like what Trump thinks about, or something like what I'm saying? They won't, just philosophically. And I think there was an article, I think even in the New York Times or something, we don't know if it's true, given who they are, but the article said that out of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard, only three, I believe, out of the 270 people were going to vote for Trump. So that's the kind of, that's the reality what we're facing. A very minuscule set of people would even support the current president. You know, so you have a very interesting convergence that's taking place in country. And I think we're at an extraordinarily important time of the division. And I'm not talking, the division I'm talking about is not Republicans versus Democrats, but I'm talking about the division between those people who believe the state, like a few set of people, should control who we are versus everyday people running the government, you know, everyday people having their voice, you know, bottoms up government versus top down. So the fact right. that one individual, like a guy like Anthony Fauci, is essentially controlling the economic policy of this country is quite extraordinary. That's what's actually going on. Health policy by an individual who has his own agenda is really running the entire country right now. One individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Shiva. What about the coronavirus? What about the fact that you know they're making so much of shutting everything down? I know that that isn't a policy that's coming directly from President Trump. I think his advisors are probably advising him to do things. The reality is that if you don't have a compromised immune system, you really don't have a whole lot of fear to fear from this virus. And they don't even know what the connections are on this. Talk a little bit more, if you would, about why it's so important that we look at this as a totally different thing than just treating it like a plague.
Yeah, you made a very, very good point here, Dan. And that's what I've been trying to emphasize when this occurred, that really started, I think people starting to get very interested in the videos that I was doing, is the fact that if you go to the science, the real science about this, not the fake science, and let's start there, because there is still, you know, the sun does go around the earth, right? You can't make up stuff when you actually do real science and you follow the scientific method versus if you do scientific consensus. And the real science, just as clear as a sun go, the earth going around the sun, people, the scientific consensus, I'm sorry, just to back, go back here, at a point in human history was 97% of people, of the scientists, said that the sun goes around the earth, if you remember that. And there was one guy who actually had data showing the opposite was true. And when it comes to any phenomenon, be it climate change, quote unquote climate change, et cetera, we're seeing today, the truth, because of truth gets manufactured today by the fake science community, which the fake media then simply cuts and pastes what the fake science guys do, that the truth, unfortunately, gets hidden until someone like me comes along and has to vociferously and has to demand it, is that the immune system is something that has come about over an enormous amount of engineering over and over again, if you believe by natural design, if you believe it through evolution, which means we came out of viruses, we came out of bacteria, we came out of fungi, right? We came out of all these things. And the immune system, if the body is in its homeostasis, which is if you are you, meaning you are not disturbed by your own, your own type of ill health that you most people either did it because they did not know how to take care of their health. What you end up with is that you have a situation where the immune system gets compromised, and when the immune system gets compromised, your body is going to behave in a very different way, in what's called a disturbed way, okay? And when that occurs, your body overreacts to situations. That's what happens. Dan, I can come in, by the way, on audio if you want, video if you want.
No, sure,
I'm sort of informal, if that's okay with you.
No, that's fine. Okay. We're an informal network here, so please do.
Hold on. Let me see if I can do this right now.
Even this is a Citizens Patriots Network.
okay.
Grassroots.
Let me come on here. One second.
Well, while we're waiting for that, I want to let our listeners know too, you've nailed something right on the head where big pharma and big ag and big academia are literally controlling the entire debate right now, and they're doing it to the detriment of the American people. Scientific community at large is being hurt by this because they've allowed, I guess I'd have to call it special interests, to take over most of the important things that are happening in the world today. So please tell us how you feel about that too.
Let me just turn this off here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, turn down your YouTube.
Yeah. I'm just going to leave here. Okay. There you go. Sorry about that. So anyway, as I was sharing what's happened, is that what we really have, that's why I use hashtag Pharma Fauci, okay? Is that big pharma over the years has essentially become the driver of health policy in this country. It's become the driver of medical health education in this country. It's become, so it drives what we put into our mouth, you know, or what we get injected when there's an illness that takes place. It drives who the person is that comes before us, who is the server of that modality or the diagnosis or the procedure. And it also controls the entire supply chain and how all of this gets done. So you have three things that are being controlled: the logistics and the supply chain by big pharma, the entire ecosystem. You have the individuals who deliver that service, their educational model being done in many ways. I hit on MDs to the extent that, and I should really be a little bit softer, I guess, but really they are victims of a very unfortunate educational process. Mm-hmm. And then you have the fact, the actual product that's being delivered, you know, to us, right? So you have multiple things that big pharma controls. And if you look at the history of this entire thing, you know, a guy like Henry Wellcome of GlaxoSmithKline, you know, one of the big companies, Henry Wellcome's worked, I believe, when he was growing up in a small drugstore, and became GlaxoSmithKline, which is now GSK. And Henry Wellcome's father or uncle, I believe, I think it was his uncle, told Henry, look, you can sell anything. You know, it's all about marketing. So he learned at a very young age that you could sell garbage to people if you knew how to market it properly. And that's what Big Pharma is. Fundamentally, it's massive amounts of marketing and PR, marketing and PR, marketing and PR. And I think part of the thing people need to understand is that we, as everyday, good, common sense, working people who, most of the American people, you know, my experience has been extremely honest, hardworking, noble people, in many ways, innocent people who have no idea of the level of corruption and how these people operate. So their entire modus of operation is to really do anything by any means necessary to brainwash people that this is the only modality, which means this, meaning drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, as a way to your health. I may have mentioned many years ago in 1990, when I was running one of my companies, which is a company called EchoMail. It's a technology I built to analyze email, separate from the invention of email, what I did as a kid in 1978. But I built another company to analyze inbound email. I originally did it for the U.S. White House. As email volume was growing, the White House needed technology to analyze and route email. But one of the cool features of that technology, Dan, was we could see volumes of email coming in, and we could see patterns, right? Were people happy? Were they sad? Were they upset? Which was a great tool for a customer service in companies. And I remember meeting with Burson Marsteller. It's one of the biggest PR agencies in the world, which manages crises for companies. And I was a young kid that I think I was 29 or something. And I went out with this guy who's much older than me, who was a senior vice president Burson, because I wanted to get him as an account, because they wanted to use EchoMail to imagine for their customers who were receiving in email, imagine they could see a crisis before it occurred, Dan. So imagine Toyota could have used our technology and seen there were people going to have brake pedal issues, right? Or a company was going to have some issues so they could do the right thing. So anyway, I said, so what do you do? He goes, I help companies put out crises and make them look good to the public. I go, really? So this is, remember, the number one public relations firm in the world for crisis management. You can look them up. I think Burst and Marsteller. So he proceeds to tell me over dinner how one of his achievements that he was so proud of was how he helped Eli Lilly, one of the big pharma companies, that at a point in their history, Prozac sales was going down, Dan. People weren't buying Prozac. So I said, and this was one of their blockbuster drugs, so they needed the sales to go back up. And I said, what did you do? And he was frankly quite proud of himself. He said, what I did was, he goes, I went in and first of all, changed their branding. I think their subline or their tagline was, you know, we create drugs. People should go look this up. And he changed it to, you know, we help people's lives, right? As a company that helps you. But the thing that stuck in me to this day was, he said they created two nonprofits, okay? Corporation creating nonprofits. And one of them, which I still remember to this day, the nonprofit he said they created, was a nonprofit which was to protect battered women, okay? Mm-hmm. And that nonprofit, he said, you know, they funded them. So the nonprofit is now the front end. And the nonprofit would take out full page ads, supporting to ensure women weren't getting battered. But in those ads, they would put in, you know, in the ad copy to say, do you know if your friend's husband is battering her? Do you know people who are being battered, women? Please make sure the husband is taking his Prozac. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they connected this outward issue, which was, oh my God, of course we don't want, you know, women getting battered, connected that emotional issue. And this is how advertising works, to linking it to a product, right? Which is Prozac. And I said, how did it go? He goes, oh, phenomenal. He goes, you know, Prozac sales went up. And he goes, how do you think I got this job here, senior vice president? Okay. So what I'm trying to tell you here is that these people who do these things very deliberately. Okay. There are companies, organizations, they get, frankly, the best, quote unquote, the best insidious minds in the world to help them. So the reason I gave you that example is, it is not that, I don't think it would be that hard to, you know, interpolate to what I shared also with, if you look at in a much grander scale, okay, what Big Pharma is doing, has done in the last 10 years. And for this particular reason, because pharmaceutical sales are actually going down, Dan. A lot of people don't know this. There's a growing set of people who said, I'm not going to take that drug. Hey, maybe garlic is good for me. Oh, maybe turmeric helps my liver, right? I'm reading that the ancient Indians used it. Oh, maybe I add some oregano. So you have that phenomenon of people on their own, you know, going to alternative therapy. So you have that one trend. The other trend you have is that the FDA itself is not allowing new drug. So what the FDA does is, you have to apply, and I've done this by myself. Our company has done this, first time we ever did it. If you think you have a drug or a new thing that can help something, you have to go to the FDA if you want to lay claims that drug can solve a disease, to file with the FDA, probably about 10,000 pieces of paperwork. And that's called an investigational new drug allowance. And then the FDA says, okay, Dan, or your company, I will allow you to now test this drug on humans, clinical trials. So it's a process that you have to do, Dan, to get that allowed. Well, guess what's happening? Pharma companies are spending year over year, they're increasing their R&D spending 30% per year. So imagine 30% per year in expenses are growing. Well, with the notion, oh, we're going to discover new drugs, and the FDA will allow them. And the curve for spending goes like this, Dan, and the curve for allowances coming down like this, like that. Mm-hmm. All right? So pharma is basically, even the FDA is acknowledging many of the drugs that pharma is producing in the clinical trials are toxic. They're going to cause death and harm to people. So they're not even allowing them. And if a drug does make it out of that, by the way, it takes around, you know, on a good day and on a very bad day, 13 years for a drug to make it through that process, right? And remember, if a drug is patented, in the beginning of that process, you only have 20 years right. for patent life. So pharma companies have 7 years to recoup their cost. And if that drug, if you remember something like Vioxx, had side effects, well, they lose $5 billion, plus they have to pay lawsuits. So the development of drugs to farm drugs, by the way, I'm not talking about, you know, is turmeric or an herb, right? It is a synthetic compound that did not occur in nature. Okay. Right. So allowances are going down, more and more expenses you're spending, and you have high liability because in pharmaceuticals, you can sue the pharma company. I can sue them. You can sue them. We can do class action lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies. So pharma is actually having a bad year or bad decade, right? So what did they do? Their solution was vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because they don't get sued in vaccines, right?
Yes, because what happened was, going back to what I shared in 1962, the Vaccination Act was put into effect by John Kennedy, who, frankly, I thought he was one of the greatest presidents. If he were around today, I think he'd be a conservative Republican, probably a supporter of Trump, more than likely. But at the time that the Vaccination Act was developed, Dan, they had a very, very early understanding of the immune system, right? If you want, it was like, you know, it was like an Edsel, the Ford Edsel, right? It was a very simple understanding of how the immune system worked. In 1986, from 1962 to 86, 24 years later, people were getting hurt from vaccines. Remember, the Vaccination Act created the Center for Communicable Diseases, like the CDC. The CDC was told to lay down guidelines for all the states, and those guidelines were being adopted by the states. Sometimes today we have to get the guidelines are 30 different vaccines, 30 different vaccines for a state, right? For your kids, 70 doses. Mm-hmm. So children are being injured, and parents were suing the pharma companies. I believe, I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe in 86, prior to 86, a year before, in 85, there were nearly about 1,000 lawsuits, five lawsuits a week, something quite extraordinary. So what did the lawyer lobbyists do to protect their big pharma buddies? They created the National Vaccination Injury Program, National Vaccine Injury Program. The sponsors of that were another Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, mm-hmm. And then Waxman and Orrin Hatch, okay? And that National Vaccine Injury Program created the vaccine courts. So think about this. What they did was, we're supposed to have the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative branch. They pulled out where you and I could not even follow the concept that the founders of this country laid. They carved out a new court and they put it under Health and Human Services. And it was called a vaccine court. So that means you or I could not sue the corporations, the vaccine manufacturers, big pharma, in through our normal constitutional system in the judicial branch. We had to go underneath the executive branch. And it was a big band-aid that Kennedy really created. And instead of getting rid of his brother's act, which should have just gone away because science had progressed, wasn't taken into account, because that science that the vaccine model was based on, which I assert was at best an outdated science, and by today's standards, a fake science. And so the National Vaccine Injury Program got created. And what did that do? Well, beautiful for pharma. You created an infrastructure now that they could be completely indemnified, which means we can't sue them. And you also have to understand, we have a drug, a synthetic drug has to go through a very regulatory process before it can get put out. A biomedical device also has to go a regulatory process, you know, like a catheter or a medical device. However, vaccines were put into their own little protected class. They don't have to go through those trials. In fact, to this date, of the 30 vaccines mandated for children, not one has gone through double-blind placebo-controlled studies. Let me repeat that, which means not one has gone through double-blind placebo-controlled studies. What do I mean by that? A double-blind placebo-controlled study is a gold standard in science, okay? Or you understand, in fact, the FTC in the 11th Circuit Court ruling about 3 years ago, if you can't do randomized controlled tests, you should at least be able to do what's called biological mechanisms, how this thing works in the body, which is what, by the way, the technology I built out of MIT allows people to do. I have a new technology which actually allows you to understand mechanisms, okay? That's what I do long before I got involved in this for the last 16 years. So vaccines, of all the 30 vaccines, even if you use the gold standard of double-blind placebo-controlled studies, what do I mean by that? If I'm going to give, before I give your son or daughter or impose or mandate a vaccine, it should go through this trial. And what that means is you have literally the vaccine, the actual vaccine. Let's say I have 10,000 people, 5,000 people should get the actual vaccine, okay? The other 5,000 should get not the vaccine, but salt water, Dan, which is saline. And then that's a saline, please. But it's supposed to be double blind. That means the 5,000 people you give it to, they don't even know what they're getting. Okay. And the other 5,000 don't know what they're getting. So that's single blind. But more importantly, the researcher themselves, Dan, does not know what they got. So it's double blind. So I, as a researcher, can't manipulate the results, and you reduce the placebo effect. Okay. Or you try to keep them, each party not knowing. That's called double blind. Now, out of the 30 vaccines that we mandate for our kids or that CDC has laid down, not one of them has gone through that, Dan. I was shocked when I found this. And in fact, even more insidious is that one of those, which they purport, went through double blind placebo controlled studies, which is the Gardasil vaccine, the HPV vaccine, enforced on, you know, young kids now, or being enforced on young teenagers. It was absolute fraud what they did there. What they did in that case was they gave one group the vaccine, Dan. You know what they gave the other group? They gave the other group not saline. They gave the other group aluminum sulfate. Oh. Now, when they create a vaccine, the way it's created is they take a deadened version, or what's called an attenuated version of the virus. The concept of a vaccine is I'm going to expose you, right, to a little bit of the disease so your body can create the antibodies, okay? Mm-hmm. Right? But what they do is they weaken it a little bit to make that process occur. But it wasn't working. The vaccines weren't working. So what they're trying to do is mimic nature. In the old days, if I had chicken pox, everyone came to my house and we all got chicken pox, right? You got the full exposure, and then you got the antibodies for life, by the way, right? And they have found when you get vaccines, by the way, you don't get the antibodies for life. They sort of work, and then you have to get them again and again and again. Nice model, for recurring revenue. So in the case of the vaccines, they attenuate, which means deaden the virus, and it's supposed to be effective. Well, it wasn't effective, Dan, because what your body's trying to do is to create inflammation in the normal course of where if I sneeze on you, for example, and I have measles or something, your body undergoes what's called an inflammatory response and creates the antibodies. One second. Mm-hmm. So in this case, they attenuated it and it wasn't working. So you know what they did? They had to add what are called adjuvants, other things which would create that inflammatory response, aluminum, mercury. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Gardasil vaccine had that aluminum. Now, instead of giving, so they gave one set of people the full vaccine with all the adjuvants. Well, the other group should have gotten it without the adjuvants, right? Just the saline. Well, they gave the aluminum sulfate. And then they created a small group. So they gave, if I remember the numbers, I think it was 10,000 got the full vaccine. I think about 9,600, Dan, 9,700 got the aluminum sulfate. And it's really weird what they did. They created a third group, Dan, of 300 odd people who they gave just the saline. Okay.
I'll bet the results are interesting.
Yeah, the results were very interesting. The first group, 2.3% of the first group had autoimmune disorders, right? Some type of inflammatory autoimmune issues. The second group also had autoimmune issues, 2.3%. And then the third group, no one had any because it was just saline. But in the package inserts, by the way, 90% of the medical doctors who give these vaccines don't even read the package inserts. If people actually read the package inserts and the warnings, the number of diseases that the vaccine they say will create is about another $500 billion industry. Vaccines around 50 to 60 billion. The diseases that if you add that in the inserts are another 500 billion. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what they did was when they combined these data, they said, oh, well, you know, 2.3% who get the vaccines, you know, they get autoimmune, and also 2.3% who get the quote unquote placebo, when it's a fake placebo, it was aluminum. And then in the final analysis, they combined the latter two groups and they said that was saline placebo. You see?
Wow.
So the point is, vaccines are really the monetary future of big pharma, because it is their opportunity to, you know, it's sort of the Lazarus opportunity, because they're dying. Pharmaceutical right. companies are dying. This is their grand hope to be resuscitated from their death. So in order to do that, going back to the Eli Lilly example, they have to create an amazing problem that we all want to be part of, right? Of course, we don't want to batter that woman, right? Well, so what is that? Well, they created SDG3. Okay, the Sustainable Development Goals number 3 in 2015 with the WHO, the UN, et cetera. And that's sustainable. And it's all spelled out there. And the problem is,
wow,
it doesn't go look at this. You know, I have amazing researchers on our team, and we actually looked at this. Alexa, one of our researchers, went through this, and she brought this to my attention. And what that research shows is that the Sustainable Development Goals laid out in 2015 lays out a utopia, right? Lays out something we would all want, just as something we all would not want that woman to get battered. And that goal is a world where there's no income inequality, a world where there's, you know, that CO2 levels have disappeared, right? Or, you know, by the way, if CO2 levels go below 180, all life on Earth dies, 180,
right?
So they lay out this utopia, 17-point utopia. And they say in order to achieve that utopia, they created another document, I believe it's called IA 2030, Immunization Act 2030, okay, for the entire world. And it says no one left behind. No one left behind. No one left behind. And in the first chapter of it, it essentially says everywhere, anytime, everywhere, we need to vaccinate everyone. Okay? Mm-hmm. Immunization, they say, is the vehicle to get to these sustainable goals. Immunization. Well, who was part of all of this was the IFPMA, the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers, which are the three major big pharma guys. They're the ones who are part of this. So think about this. Pharma is in the background. They have now the United Nations doing their PR, no different than Burson Marsteller, creating a beautiful thing that who would not want for your children, right? But it's about immunizing everyone. Mm. And who are the people who are driving this policy are people who we never elected. Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, and Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. They are really the government. If you want to talk about it, the government, the non-governmental organizations, NGOs, right? Mm-hmm. And what have they done? These people who are supposed to pay taxes, which should go into our treasury, use laws created by lawyer lobbyists so they could create quote unquote foundations to help all of us. So they move money to evade taxes. That's what it really is. It's one of the biggest tax evasion models into their own foundations, billions of tax dollars that should be giving to the American worker, right? For our infrastructure, which is decaying. And they are controlling policy. What have they done? They're basically running their own government. Mm-hmm. And this was brought to you by the lawyer lobbyists in Congress, 60% of them. Three of them who I'm running against, by the way, for the U.S. Senate seat in Massachusetts, that's who's running the world. And those three people's motivation is to grow their foundations, to leave their legacy behind as though they are the ones who know better than us, mm-hmm. you know, the top-down model. And this is, if you want to really break it down from a globalist standpoint, this is the intricacies of this. And big pharma, is really, if you forget even the conspiracy part, just follow the money. The money is, pharma sales are going down. They could be attacked, and vaccines are their future. So, by the way, to give you a point, there's nearly 200 different vaccines in the pipeline right now. 200 more vaccines.
Mm-hmm. I believe that. Yeah. Well, and incidentally, Big Pharma is the number one contributor to political campaigns. It used to be the banking industry, but recently I read that Big Pharma is actually the biggest funder of political campaigns in our country.
Well, you have to understand, they're working like this, Dan. If you see this crisis right now, the bankers and pharma are literally integrated into one unit, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like two helixes have come together. Because what is this doing is that you've created this crisis, you fear-mongered it, and that fear-mongering is allowing the biggest, you know, the Fed basically is going to print $6 trillion. Mm-hmm. And that $6 trillion, if you follow the money, it, because of this fear, because of this crashing of our economy, I know Trump did not want to do this. If you see what he wanted to do in 2016, he wanted to get rid of the Fed, right? And it's a institution that's the biggest drug dealer. It promotes, you know, economic crack, which is what Obama created, quantitative easing through that process. Mm-hmm. So through quantitative easing right now, the Fed, because to solve this economic crisis, they're going to put out another $6 trillion. When that money flow goes from the Fed to the bankers, the 15 or 16 major banks, and what are they doing? Well, it's the biggest transfer of wealth to them. It's not really flowing into the economy, right? It's flowing into them. And to put it simply, I mean, it gets a little more complicated, but it essentially is going back to Wall Street to prop up for their friends. And more importantly, some of those dollars are flowing back to China. And China is holding our dollars in reserve. And as we crash, right, they'll buy U.S. assets. In fact, that's what they've been doing. By the way, India was growing at about 6 to 7%. And India has Modi. In many ways, he is a nationalist. He came from humble background. He beat a family dynasty. Trump came relatively, if you look at it, not from the background of the politicos, from someone who actually did something. So Modi and Trump, East and West, are one of the biggest people that the deep state does not like because they want to do their own things for their own people's advancement. And if you look at India was growing a 67% rate, even the U.S. at 2%. Now the U.S. is headed for -3% growth and India's headed for 2%. And China is going to come out good out of this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to understand. China is going to come out good out of this. So it really comes down to who does the fear support. And I would say, in my view, if you wanted me to give you my conspiracy theory, but in some ways it's a logical thing, you can probably connect it if I had a little more time to write a paper on this. It is essentially the Chinese elite. By the way, China hates its own people. They treat them like dirt. They treat these people like robots, and there's cancer cities in China. So they're the only elite in China is their elite, which is a merger of the Chinese corporations and the Chinese party. It's like, imagine all the U.S. government literally merged with the corporations, the corporate heads. That's what China is. Mm-hmm. And that entity is, in my view, in cahoots with the deep state. And so what they did was, you know, Trump was putting China on notice, right? He was not going to allow this trade deficit issue. And the deep state doesn't like Donald Trump. So this was, and China hates India, okay? You have to understand, India and China have had a long history of, you know, dispute. In fact, there's, this is an aside, Dan, there's a very famous picture, I think it was in the 1960s, with the Indian Prime Minister Nehru, who was not so smart of a guy, by the way. He went to China to, he wanted to stop a potential war. So he went to China, I believe it was Chou En Lai, and there's a picture of Nehru hugging Chou En Lai, thinking everything was fine. The next day, China invades India.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So people think you can trust the Chinese political system in any way. You know, it's very naive thinking. So where we are at today is Big Pharma, global Big Pharma, through its global network, the Gates Foundation, the Zuckerbergs, right? And by the way, I don't mean to be in any ways, you know, racist, but Mark Zuckerberg's wife is of Chinese background. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Chan Zuckerberg Found, LLC that they've created, $6 billion, which is going to go to their bio hub for vaccine development. Mm-hmm. And the other.
I don't want to interrupt, but what you're talking about is the model for the deep state for the New World Order is a fascist system that's based on a socialist or a communist system in coordination with big corporations. And that I think it's very clear for most of us that that's exactly what their model for the future is.
Yeah. The model for the future is so they're controlling monetary policy. So pharma controls monetary policy. So you, and if you follow this all the way to the tip of that spear, the way that you execute this is through ignorance. You know, a great man once said, ignorance is the cause of all suffering. So you create ignorance. And remember, the twin of ignorance is fear. So you create massive fear with ignorance. And that ignorance that I want to point out is the immune system. And so I find myself historically at an interesting point, Dan. My entire life, you know, has been spent studying health. You know, it's almost, you know, I have a deep belief in spirit and God. You know, I came from, you know, my grandmother was a very, very devout person who followed God. She was also a farm worker, worked 16-hour days. But on the weekend, she was a healer in our village, Dan. She would use traditional systems of medicine, not drugs, right? To understand people and figure out what was right for them using a system of medicine, which goes back thousands of years, which was based on natural plants, you know, way to connect with nature, the sun, right, foods, et cetera. So I find it quite extraordinary that I grew up in that. I had the opportunity to come to the United States as a kid, go through MIT, earn all my degrees in a field called biological engineering, my PhD, and all the other three or four degrees from MIT in engineering systems, that I find myself the lone voice, unfortunate to the opposition. I know what I'm talking about, and I have all the credentials. And I just 4 months ago gave the distinguished lecture at the National Science Foundation on the immune system. So I find it quite an extraordinary point to be here to calling out on behalf of the working people I grew up for, or those all those people who suffered so I could get my education. That's what this is about, Dan. This is about the people who produce versus the parasites. This is about working people versus people who think that we should work for them. That's where we're at. It's amazing. We're at this point in history, this singular moment in history, where it's coming down to, will we overcome our fear and will ignorance be destroyed? And that ignorance that my commitment is, which has been my whole life, is about how this body works. It's a system. It's not disconnected parts. It's a entire system. And that system was created, however way you want to think about it, by evolution or natural design to support us. And all, as long as we support that system by feeding it the right things, doing the right things, the system takes care of us.
Right.
There's nothing to fear here. So it really comes down to a very important spiritual understanding or a scientific understanding. You can come at it from two S's. Spiritual or scientific, that this system is designed to be in homeostasis. It's designed to want to work with nature for our advancement. And in order to do that, we have to make sure we're getting the right things. Well, what are those two right things, Dan? Sun, vitamin D, every culture, ancient and modern, right? Always paid homage to the sun. You know, in India, we have the Surya Namaskar, in Celtic culture, in Italian. I mean, go to every culture, the sun. Why? Because the sun, when the rays of the ultraviolet B rays of the sun hit your skin, your body produces vitamin D. Vitamin D, if you want to think about it, is like a musket, all right, or a gun, which your body then uses to produce these things called cathelicidins, which are the bullets. Okay? So your body with the sun gives you a gun, and then your body uses the vitamin D to create bullets, which literally, which I've shared in a video I just put out there, the vitamin D video, can shoot the walls of bacteria, fungi, parasites, and viruses. So why is no one except me has to, you know, with my little humble situation here, we're reaching millions of people now, talking about vitamin D as a way out of this. Well, the second one is vitamin A. Well, what's vitamin A? Well, it's the dark green leafy vegetables. It's the purple fruits. It's all the dark fruits, which if the thyroid is working fine, our body produces vitamin A. Well, what is vitamin A? Vitamin A is what builds the walls, you know, of the cytokeratin walls to protect ourselves from even being attacked. Okay. And then what is vitamin C? Well, vitamin C, you know, modulates all these molecular reactions so our body can be in homeostasis. I mean, I can get more deeper, but vitamin D, vitamin A, at least if you, so start with D. Mm-hmm. You can get D, which is sun. You're like 90% there. Let's layer in some A and let's put in some C. Mm-hmm. So that's the letter that I sent to the president of the United States saying, look, we don't have to wait for vaccines. That's what they want us to do. They want us to be victims to vaccines. Let's start this. Let's partition our public. Let's take our healthy people, give them some base levels so they could beef up their immune systems, because we know 80% are fine, even if you get these viruses, right? Or vaccines. And the remainder, critical care, if you're in ICU, give people 100 grams of drip vitamin C. By the way, anything I'm saying is documented in the literature over hundreds of years. I'm not saying anything brilliantly new, but I am saying it with a force that the academics will not, because they make money from vaccines. They make money from big pharma. So that's what it's about, Dan. It's fake science, fake media, fear-mongering, Fauci.
Yeah, no, I tell you what, I took the liberty of going to your Shiva, Be the Light, and went through the videos that you had done for that. And it goes through your background, your family history, a lot of what drives you, and then a lot of great ideas. And I really recommend our listeners go to your websites. We'll put those websites up, but follow some of your videos, because what you're saying makes perfect sense. And I do programs all over the country on UN Agenda 21, 2030. You know that the sustainability program and all the climate change and all the other nonsense is designed to blind people to what reality is. And the reality is we live in a pretty darn good world. No, we shouldn't make a mess in our own nest. We should clean our environment. We should be good with our environment. But we shouldn't let all this false science, all this fake science that you're talking about, change the way we live. We ought to use common sense to make our world a better place, but it ought to be common sense and good science. And 90% of that doesn't involve pharma.
Yeah, Dan, you said something very interesting. Infrastructure is one of the things that has always helped the world, you know? Infrastructure. In the 1900s, if we go back, what really resolved infectious diseases, in 1900s, we had 14 out of 100,000 people are dying of infectious diseases in the United States. By 1950, before even the creation of the polio vaccine, it had dropped down to around one half of a person, around 100,000. So before the development of medical interventions, we resolved nearly 95, 98% of the infectious diseases. Well, how did that occur? It occurred from something, two people we should really thank are the sanitation workers and the plumbers. So, well, first of all, we developed sanitation, you know, better plumbing systems, refrigeration, nutrition. We stopped child labor and we added vitamin A. Okay. And vitamin D, these kinds of things. People are getting rickets. Remember? That brought down that curve. You can see it. It's, you know, people just search, you'll see this infectious diseases curve come down. So by the time measles vaccine was created, 98% of measles was gone. Okay. So this is quite extraordinary when you actually look at the science and actually look at the epidemiological facts. Where, how did that come from? How did we get that infrastructure? Did the politicians give it to us on their own kindness? Did the elites give it to us? No. What happened was, in the previous decade, going into it in the early, late 1800s, coming into the early 1900s, the rise of the American working people was taking place. Working people, I'm talking about the emergent, you know, industrial workers who saw that they were living in horrible conditions, that the 0.1% of the time was just exploiting them, and they demanded, you know, all of these things. We don't want our children to be working. We want sanitation, et cetera. And there were massive, you know, militant protests in this country, which the history books don't want to talk about, because the liberal elite don't want you to talk about the American working people. They always want you to talk about Franklin Delano Roosevelt as though he was the one who saved the world, when it was the rise of independent movements. And those movements are the ones who put the fear of God into the elites of the time, the globalist elites emerging, because 1913 is when the Fed was set up. And that global elite were forced to give all those things. They didn't do it willingly. Right. And then by 1950, this is what I've, this is an important insight that I want to articulate, is when, remember, we created the McCarthy era, we created the Red Scare. Yes, Soviet Union was rising. However, we used that phenomenon to go attack our own people. So if you were a working person demanding some basic rights, you were called a communist. And that phenomenon is something we need to understand. So you have the rise of this attack, you know, put together as though we were trying to protect America from the Red Scare. But my view is that this was really a revenge against the working people's movements, which was created. And I say that because in the late 1800s, when the Haymarket riots took place, where American workers were rising up, three of them were shot. And in commemoration to those workers being shot, it was called May Day. So May Day began here. It was not a communist thing, but it was taken over by these quote unquote communists, but it was really much more of an organic working class movement from this country. And so my view is this entire, it's to me, it's a very interesting coincidence that working people were rising up on their own independently, populist movements. That's how we got the drop in infectious diseases infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And in response to that, the backlash was, we're going to come after you. We're going to call anyone who tries to stand up for themselves communists or popular, whatever you want to brand them, right? And as a part of that was the same time vaccines start coming down. Mm-hmm. Okay. You see the rise of the Fed, right? Monetary policy, Bretton Woods. You see the implementation of vaccination. So what you have is two instruments to control people financially and biologically. So I'm not saying they were done with consciousness, but it's very interesting to observe the timing of those events around late 40s, early 50s, the innovation, quote unquote, innovation of vaccines and the innovations of monetary policy. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's also a time when education should have been really blooming. And I mean, our education system since the 1960s has been in a steady decline, even though we spend a lot more money on education today than we did in the past. And it's because we've refocused education from science and math and all the things that are important to create a stronger society. We focused on things that are really irrelevant, you know, the touchy-feely things, you know, being kind, being good. I mean, don't get me wrong, we ought to have that as part of our way of life, but that certainly isn't what education is supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, in 1970s is when the Department of Education was set up. I think the turning point in this country was, if you look at it in many levels, it was 1970. Mm-hmm. It was when big pharma, big healthcare, big big health, big insurance got involved, and they merged to control health policy. It's when the Department of Education got set up. You know, I was fortunate. Many, you know, I got my public school education in the mid 70s at a time when that hadn't fully kicked in. I mean, I had amazing, dedicated high school teachers. If you remember these, I mean, my chemistry teacher, Mr. Walker, is still alive. Everything I learned, most of the stuff, the good stuff I learned, the calculus, the math, the physics, all came from high school teachers, many of them who were holding two or three jobs, Dan. Mm-hmm. Right? Mr. Walker just told me, I spoke to him about a couple of years ago. He said, you know, Shiva, when I was teaching you chemistry, and by the way, this guy was the best AP chemistry teacher. And when you talk about excellence, If the answer was 99.89, Dan, and you put 99.8, 10 points off, okay? Mm-hmm. He was pretty harsh. Why? Because he knew that if you built a reactor system and you were off by 9/10, you could probably blow up something. But now we have an education system which says, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether the answer is right. It matters how you got there.
Right.
You do something. And here's an award for you. Okay. And what's interesting, Dan, I remember this phenomenon starting to occur in sort of that late 70s period. And it's fascinating because in 1977, I was one of these very motivated athletes and really good at math. I won the math award for my high school. You were just reminding me of something. And I remember it was a very interesting thing. My math teacher said she was the best student I've had in 32 years. And I was coming out of the auditorium with my father to go see my mom, who wasn't able to attend that award ceremony. She was in the ICU. And as I come out, this very liberal woman comes charging at my father and I, saying, you know, don't be so proud of your award. My son, Eric, could have won that award, but he decided not to work that hard. Okay. So you're reminding me of something, because I think that it was in the late 70s when all of this shifted to, like, you don't have to work that hard. The answer doesn't matter. Math doesn't matter. So you have a bunch of people now who are writing for the New York Times, these little toddlers who don't know anything, nothing. They can't build anything. They can't fix anything. Mm-hmm. And these people are the ones who are controlling, brainwashing people with their view of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely horrible, because the plumbers, the electricians, the nurses, the engineers, people who are in the nuts and bolts of life, who know reality, are being, you know, put down by these, frankly, injured individuals, you know, probably vaccine injured, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
People who are controlling policy. And that's why this thing with Fauci is so profoundly important. Here's a guy who promoted the fake science, as we were hearing later, it's not even real science. There is no causal relationship between the HIV vaccine and AIDS, which is suppression of the immune system. Fauci built his entire trajectory on that, as though he saved the world from some pandemic. He didn't do anything. This is his second rodeo. 67%, last time I checked, or 30% of Africa has HIV. They're all positive. It doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. They move on with their lives. Population growth has continued in Africa. So he created a fiction, a fictional science of that all these viruses are going to kill us. Great boogeyman, right? Fear combined with ignorance of the immune system, an amazing opportunity to control all of us.
Right, right. That's what it boils down to. This is all about control, but we're going to be running out of time here shortly. I want you to talk to our listeners, to our audience, about what you perceive they should be doing to control this problem with COVID-19 and coronavirus. What's the best approach to having a healthy society? Isn't it just living a good quality life without a lot of sugar and a lot of other chemicals in your system? Let's hear what you got to say about that.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Dan. I think the most important thing we need to, you used the word health, Dan. If health is a goal, and there's two parts to this health. There's a physical health of our body, our own bodies. There's a health of our infrastructure, you know, and then there's a health of everything around us, right? There's sort of these three aspects of health. That's why I call it a system, right? We're not separated from the environment. And the environment doesn't include just the roads and bridges and the water systems. It also includes what's in the air, water, and food, right? These are all three interconnected systems. We need systems health. You know, one of the things I started, if people want to go, is systemshealth.com. And I've built a whole new way of teaching people how you can view systems. And I can teach people this in probably a couple of hours, Dan. It's a new science that comes from my work over many, many years in engineering systems, but I can teach it to lay people. You don't need to go to MIT, okay? It's a revolutionary way for people to understand how systems work. And you can begin with understanding how the systems in your body work. So I created an app, Dan, that people can use called Your Body, Your System. You know, I used to sell it for thousands of dollars, Dan. I think we're giving it away like for $25. It's online. So if you're anywhere in the world, Your Body, Your System, you can get it. It's out there. But one of the important things is people need to understand that for the health of you, it starts with understanding truth, okay? So we have to unravel this. So how do you get truth? Well, before truth, you need to have freedom, right? Truth, freedom, and health. We need to have freedom, which is freedom of speech, freedom of debate, academic freedom, right? From that freedom, we're able to answer questions, ask questions, to use the scientific method to understand the universe around us, or we get to scientific consensus. So if you want to take care of your health, you can no longer put your head in the dirt anymore, in the sand. You have to become an awakened citizen, an enlightened citizen, to understand your health and the politicians you vote for are intimately connected. So if you vote for people who keep suppressing freedom, if you vote for people who support academia, because if you support scientific consensus versus the scientific method, you get to fake science. And with fake science, we create systems of governance of our health. So we tell people drugs are the way, right? Drugs are the only way. You know, I'm not saying if in a critical condition, you know, you're in a horrible accident. Look, Western medicine's amazing for that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you hit your hand with a hammer and your hand's bulging, yeah, you probably may want to take, in that extreme case, some Advil or ibuprofen, et cetera. But there are other methods too, okay? But what you have access to. But if it comes down to taking care of your health, it's at least a two-part strategy. One is what you put inside of you, but also what's outside of you. And how did that outside of you get there? Let's start with the inside part, which is related to the outside, but it's immunity. The immune system is really the operating system of your body. You take care of your immune system, everything else gets taken care of. So whether it's COVID-19, whether it's the next flavor that they'll have next year, by the way, which will be to force vaccinate us, okay? Mm-hmm. Which will say, hey, look, we had that. You can't go to your gym without a vaccine. You can't get a license without, et cetera. But if it's to take care of our health, let's begin to understand that the body's waiting for you to do the right thing, and it'll bring itself back into its natural homeostasis. Well, it goes back, if you want to protect yourself and your family, start with food is medicine, right? It's the oldest, food is medicine, which Hippocrates said. Well, food, meaning sunlight, and what you put in. Let's start there into your bodies. So are you getting adequate vitamin D? If you can't get it from out there, and if we're being quarantined, you know, start eating the fatty fish, right? Start looking at supplements like D3, cocalciferol. And these things, as I mentioned, really support antimicrobial activity. They control all sorts of processes. Vitamin D, by the way, is a hormone. It's not a vitamin. It's sort of an hormone that affects so many processes in your body. Vitamin D. Vitamin A, are you eating? Start with food again. Are you getting the green leafy vegetables? You know, the purple yams, the dark, rich foods. These are rich in carotenoids. And your body will make vitamin A if your thyroid is working right. If your thyroid is not working right, it could be various reasons. You may want to get your TSH levels checked, or you may want to make sure you're getting adequate iodine and iodide. And one of the things I put out there, I don't get any money from these guys. You want to look for products that give you iodine and iodide. Lugol's is one of them, 3 drops. And it's also been recommended even by the WHO, okay? Even those guys. And you can help your children and yourself because if you have enough iodine and iodide, your thyroid's working fine. You eat these rich carotenoid foods. And by the way, you can also...
I think we lost Dr. Shiva. I hope he comes back on. He's absolutely right. It's garbage in, garbage out. If we don't take care of our own bodies, we don't take care of ourselves, we're not going to be able to do anything to support good health. We cannot eat a lot of garbage, eat a lot of fast food, things like that, and expect to have a healthy body. It's just that simple. So I'm hoping that Dr. Shiva, we've still got 5 minutes left, although I'm sure glad we had him for this long. I have to say, I do recommend that people go to his website. We see him back. Okay, Dr. Shiva, go ahead and unmute. I'd like to give you the last 5 minutes, but what you're talking about is get away from this fast food, get away from the garbage, and start eating right. And don't eat a lot of sugar, don't eat a lot of garbage, just live a good life. Dr. Shiva, you're muted right now. Okay.
Yeah, the other thing is the people that you're putting into office. Is that right, Dan?
Yes, yes. Everything's excellent.
The people that you're putting into office, are they delivering you infrastructure? Because it's infrastructure that directly supports our health. It is infrastructure. So in that model, are they delivering you clean air, clean water, and clean food, Dan? Right? Because if they're not delivering you clean air, clean water, and clean food, the quality of stuff that you're putting into your mouth is probably not that great, okay? Mm-hmm. Or the quality of stuff that you're getting in the environment. So we need to start with, what are you putting in? Let's go back to basics. Sun, exercise, you know, the rich, dark vegetables, and as you said, and fruits, are you eating their toxic sugar? By the way, Dan, you know, the FDA says that, do you know what the definition of a jam or a jelly is? It has to have at least 40% sugar in it. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't. No.
That's definition of, you know, one of my, one of the things I do is I help organizations with, you know, really understanding how to really support the certification of a whole new model of food. I created this out of one of our institutes. It's called Clean Food. And I was talking to a woman who's down in Texas who makes these amazing jams from all organic foods. And she was saying, Shiva, do you know I have to put a certain amount of sugar to be for it to be a jam or a jelly? I go, really? And she goes, that was mandated by the FDA. So what you're talking about is the level of collusion, Dan, is so incredible. That's why I get back to the point. We as American people are such good, honest, noble people that we're actually very innocent, naive people. We have been taken advantage of by these people. So it's basically for us to go back to ourselves, clean air, clean water, clean food, vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin C, you know, the rich minerals. And this becomes a way that you get your freedom. Mm-hmm. Our freedom now is directly connected to our health and directly connected to truth. Truth, freedom, and health, Dan. That's really the basis of my Senate campaign. You know, whether, you know, it's running for Senate or not, that's been the basis of my life for a long time, that these things are interconnected. And, you know, I like the name of your show, Connecting the Dots. So those three dots are truth, freedom, and health as a system are interconnected. If we want health, we can't, you have to fight for freedom. And if we want health, we have to fight for truth. You can't get there just by, so you see a lot of these new age narcissists, I call them, who live out in California and Western Mass. They go do their yoga. They have their yoga pants. They do their meditation. They think they're going to live in their little bubble. They're out of their, you know, they're a little bit lost. You have to participate in the political process. You have to fight for freedom. And only if you're strong can you fight for freedom. And you have to demand that we have real science. Mm-hmm. So that's the path forward, Dan.
Well, I think it's a great path forward. I do have to, we're almost out of time, but I want to invite you to be a speaker next October. We're doing another Red Pill Expo in, this time it's going to be in Jekyll Island, Georgia, to commemorate the anniversary of the Federal Reserve. But we are going to ask you to be a speaker at that event, because what you're talking about is so important. Understanding that the body is a system. We're all part of a system. We're all part of a much more complex world, and we can't think as every individual part being separate. We've got to realize we live in a real world that's very complex. So thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks, Dan. And Dan, last thing, as you go, one of the things we want to understand is that when you look at systems, you can apply it to politics. And we need to understand that the way change will occur is from bottoms up, fighting the establishment. And we need to also be aware of the not so obvious establishment, Dan, which we can talk about at another time. The people who speak the rhetoric of this, but you got to really watch what their intentions are. And that's what, the more we become adept at that, that's when we're going to win.
Well, I told Thumper when I got to know you a little bit better through all your writings and your various recordings and stuff, my friend, you were someone who I would absolutely love to have as friend, because you used common sense, and you're one of the patriotic type of Americans that we need more of in this country. No question about it.
Thank you, Dan. Same to you. You remind me of everyday people I grew up with in Jersey.
Dr. Shiva, if I might ask a favor of you, we would love for to have permission to play your videos on Patriot Soapbox as part of our process of educating people to what's going on.
You know, my great grandfather, who was an indentured servant who went to India, he had nothing, but he was very frugal, worked his buns off. But one thing he would give money for or do things for anyone for education, because education. So please feel free to share as much of them you want in any medium you want. It's fine. You know, it's the way that we're going to get liberation is through education. I was very fortunate to get the education I had. And it would not be right if I sort of try to own that piece. You know, I do all of these. I don't get paid for them, but it is really my way of giving back to this country and all those people who gave me so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's thank you. Reason. We appreciate it.
And that's the reason we do these programs too, is because we've got to give a lot back to this country. It's given us a lot, and we need to save America. We need to make sure that we continue to be the bright light, the shining exactly. light for the rest of the world. And thank you for being part of our program. I look forward to having you on again. I hope you'll come back.
Definitely, Dan. I'll be shaving then. Don't worry. I've been just working hard, so but I didn't pay proper respect to you guys. I didn't get shaved today, so please don't keep that against me.
No, we won't. I promise you.
Okay.
Your brain is what we were after.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you. Thanks to both of you. Be well.
All righty. Thank you.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to understand. Restore the Republic. We're losing our freedom